Hello, traders and general public. This is Bob Fox from GreedandMoney.com. And today, again, I have the privilege to have the well-respected expert, Glenn Neely, in Neo Wave and Neely River Theory here with me. Glenn, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I've unfortunately been recovering from the flu, so my voice may sound a little funny for today's interview.
Okay. Well, I hope you feel better. Well, this is the second part of our interview regarding Neely River Theory. In our last discussion, we covered the focus of Neely River Theory is on three types of traders and how to trade the market depends on whichever trader is dominating the market at the time. So today we probably will go deeper on exactly how Neely River Theory works, right, Glenn?
Well, we'll go into some different aspects of it and make some interesting comparisons to wave theory, which will be probably very intriguing to most people. So I would like to just sort of pick up a little bit about where we left off from the last interview to bring people up to speed, and then we can move on a little bit.
Sure. Please go ahead.
Okay, so if you remember last time, we talked about the comparison of water flowing through a river with gravity being the primary force and prices moving through a market with money being the primary force. So I've shown these two different charts, one showing fluid dynamics in a river and then comparing that to the three zones that creates in a river. We have a range of turbulence near the north bank, range of turbulence near the south bank, and more directional action near the middle of a river. And we had taken that information and then compared it to the idea of money flowing through a market, producing up and down price action, and how you also have similar turbulent price action near the top of a market's channel and the bottom of a channel, and more directional price action toward the middle of a channel. And just about anybody can see this kind of behavior on a chart, just looking over it for a short period of time. It's very common for markets to chop around and oscillate a lot near major tops or bottoms and to trend much better toward the middle of the movement. So that's very similar to the way water moves through a river. So it's the same or similar idea. And over time, this idea started to make me realize that the way that price action behaves is dependent not only on where you are in a river, but who's in charge of the trend. And the different controlling elements on the market are trend traders, those who buy into strength or sell into weakness, top and bottom pickers, those who are trying to sell near the high or buy near the low, just the opposite of the trend followers. And then the bargain hunters, which really don't try to get in at the top or the bottom, but they let the high or the low happen, let the market, react and then pull back toward the high or the low and then get in with a clearly defined stop and hopefully ride at the early start of a new trend. And the bargain hunters are generally accumulators, long-term accumulators and distributors. I would put Warren Buffett as a bargain hunter. He waits for, all hell to break loose and everybody to be dying to sell. And so there's bargains everywhere, sort of like going to shop on a sale day for Thanksgiving or after Thanksgiving. It's waiting for great bargains. And that's the three different types of traders. So it's top and bottom pickers, bargain hunters, and trend followers. And River Theory recognizes all three as an important part of the market. Most systems just pick one, and they'll say, well, we're a trend follower, a trend following system. And so it's only dealing with one third of the reality of a market, which means by definition, it only can make money or make great money about a third of the time. The rest of the time, it's either going to struggle or lose money because the market doesn't always behave in a trend following kind of fashion. It's not always trending well. Sometimes it goes sideways for long periods of time, which is when bargain hunting works better. And then sometimes markets have major defined tops, and wave theory works really great for picking tops and bottoms, and you know, catching the higher the low is the best time to get in for trades like that or environments like that. So each environment has its special place and time, sort of every dog has its day, and if you only trade in one particular fashion, then you're automatically going to be limiting yourself to only about one-third of the time that a market is behaving in that way. And that's why most systems are designed around the idea that you're going to lose money for a while, but you just have to control your risk so that when things get good, you'll start making money. Whereas River Theory takes a whole different approach, and it tries to figure out who's in charge, which group, trend followers, bargain hunters, or top and bottom pickers, tries to figure out which group is in charge based on a very objective process, not a subjective or mathematical formula or anything like that. And it allows you to automatically and immediately adjust the way you're trading to fit that style of trader. So you're doing what that one out of three is doing the right way instead of what the two-thirds are doing the wrong way for every change in the environment. So as a river trader, you're constantly changing the way you trade. So right now in the S&P, we currently are trend followers. We went short into weakness just a week or so ago, and so far it's working out great. But sometimes I'll wait for the market to bounce off of a low and go short on a bounce, or sometimes I'll look to pick a top or a bottom. So I'm constantly changing the way I trade, which is one reason why I think my service does pretty well most of the time, because I'm not trying to force the market to fit a particular style of trading, which virtually all other systems and computer systems and newsletters and whatever else almost always sticks to one style of trading, and that's sort of the downfall. If we move on to the chart where it shows three trading zones, the three trading zones sort of reflect what I'm talking about, where if the market trend is up, the zone one at the top would be the trend followers, where they're buying into strength. The zone two would be where bargain hunters are buying into retracements. And zone three would be where the what I call the wholesale buyers are buying near the low, trying to pick the bottom. So that's in an uptrend. And, of course, if you have a downtrend, then you have three more zones, exactly the same concept, but all in reverse. So when it comes to markets, you actually have six different realities. Most people, are, let's say, in a regular retail environment, you only have at most about three realities. You have the wholesaler, who then might sell to a middleman, who then might warehouse locally products and services, or these products, and then you have the retail location like a store or grocery store where you're buying these final products and they hope you take it home and never come back. So it's a one-directional phenomenon from the wholesaler to the middleman to the retailer. But when it comes to markets, there is no absolute defined best price or worst price. Nobody really knows what is the best price. So you can have people buying and selling in both directions. So you have wholesalers trying to pick the bottom, but you may have, if they think the trend is up, and you might have wholesalers trying to pick the top if they think the trend is down. So you have a doubling of the complexity of the market, number one, and this creates six different participants in the market: those who are bullish, and that's your three that I mentioned earlier, trend followers, bargain hunters, and top and bottom pickers, and that's on the bullish side. And you have the same thing occurring on the bearish side. So you have the same three people, but looking at things in the exact opposite way. So you have six primary participants, and if you have six participants in a market, you divide that by 100, that means you're only getting a probability of being right about 12.5% of the time, because you're trying to be that one out of six who's doing the exact right thing at the exact right time. And that's the reason why it's so hard for most people to make money trading, because the chances of always being that one out of six is not very good. River Theory's goal is to not only objectively, without any kind of formulas or mathematical analysis, but pure observational analysis and based on current information, not forecasts of the future, it gives you an idea of what the actual trend is just by observing. So like if you're standing in front of a river, it doesn't take a lot of time or analysis or instruments to figure out which way the water is going, right? You just look and you can just sort of tell. River theory is the same way. You can just look at a chart and tell what the likely trend is. And so once you know what the trend is, then you have to decide, well, am I going to be a trend trader? Like, am I going to buy into strength? Am I going to wait for reaction, maybe 50% reaction and buy on a pullback? Or am I going to try to pick the bottom? So then river theory also makes the process of determining who's in charge of the trend relatively easy. And so you know what style of trading that you're going to implement. Now this, do you have any questions before I go on?
Sure. But I don't know how deep you want to get into it. How does neo-river theory help us to define one of those three traders is dominating in the market?
It all has to do with just looking at price action. And, of course, that's the, you might say, secret part that I don't reveal to the public. This is something I've been working at for 30 years, and it's taken a lifetime to understand all this, and it's not something I just hand out free to the public. But it does make it a very objective process. When I start the class with students, I had a new one start just recently, I explained to him that when most people approach markets, they come in with this thought process that predicting the future is the way that you make money trading. I think we may have covered that in our talk number one, where I talked about a trading paradigm and a forecasting paradigm. Have we gone through that yet?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So they come into a market with the belief, and it's strictly just a human belief decision, that markets have to be predicted first before you can benefit from them second. And river theory turns that whole thing upside down. And it's, again, related to the way rivers work. You know, you don't look at a river and decide which direction the ocean is. So when you're trading isn't about figuring out where the market's ultimately going to go so that you can make money. The goal is to survive, like your position has to survive until the market goes wherever it happens to end up going. So it doesn't deal at all with trying to predict what's going to happen. It only deals with how you get in safely using the right kind of entry strategy, the right kind of stop placement, the right kind of stop movement until the market actually takes you out or reaches a point where you can get more aggressive with your stops to eventually let the market stop you out. So it's never anticipating where it's going to go. It's never worrying about where it's going to go. It's worrying about where you're going to get in, where your stop's going to go, and getting risk to zero as quickly as possible. That's the whole focus of river theory. And like I said, it's extremely different than anything I've seen all my career. And it does take time getting used to this, because most people always want to feel like they're somehow in control. It's a human, you know, characteristic. They want to control things, especially when it comes to finances. They don't want to just leave things to hope and faith. But, you know, again, if you compare it to a river, your thoughts have zero to do with where the river is going to go and how long it's going to take to get to the ocean. That what you think about it is completely irrelevant. Same thing with markets. What you believe is going to happen is irrelevant. What's important is what you do right now to survive until whatever's going to happen happens, and you maneuver in a way that you're avoiding, so to speak, the rocks and the sandbars and the waterfalls and the edge of the river and all that. You're just avoiding the problems until it takes you wherever it's going to go. And that's the way good trading is done, and it's taken me a lifetime to figure that out.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask a few more questions, and of course you can always kindly decline if I get into too detailed, because I'm not sure the level of question I ask is going to be too detailed for this conversation. So I suspect that Neely River Theory focuses a lot on horizontal supports and resistance, especially considering when you deal with the trend following trader, which is, I would consider, more of a breakout trader, similar to the turtle system. And same thing with the retracement, what you consider the bargain hunter, which I would call it more of a retracement traders, where they come and buy 50% retracement, 60.8% retracement, Fibonacci type of deal. So my first question would be, is horizontal support and resistance one of the key factors that you focus on? And the second thing is for picking the top and the bottom, that seems to be fairly difficult because you really don't have a horizontal support and resistance most of the time.
Well,
so I suspect
the way that you're talking automatically implies there's prediction involved with the process.
Okay.
So if you're talking about support and resistance, then you're automatically trying to predict something, right? River theory is not about prediction of market, future market action, where it might top and where it might bottom. It's about how you trade, how you enter, how you exit, how you place stops, not what you think is going to happen. So it does take, most of my students I teach, it takes at least a month before they get out of this forecasting paradigm and get into what I call a trade paradigm, where you forget about what you believe and you forget about what you think and you forget about what's supposed to happen and forget about how markets feel. It's not about any of that stuff because all that's human judgment and forecasting and prediction and control issues. And
it's really hard because I think majority of a trader, they obviously have to believe something before they enter a trade. But you're saying the technology you discover and implemented, it does not think like that, and it's definitely required a certain level of a paradigm shift to get
absolutely
into your level
that's
of thinking.
Absolutely. A paradigm shift in thinking that's required, and that's the only thing I think that will hold back River Theory from being maybe, eventually very popular or famous, whatever you want to say, because it is completely contrary to the initial belief system of anybody who gets involved in markets. When you come into the markets initially, you hear television talking about every hot forecaster or trader recently and what they think the markets are going to do. You look at newspapers as always predicting what the economy is going to do. You get newsletters, it's the same thing. You get computer programs are always trying to predict what's going to happen, psychoanalysis. Everything you see and hear and read is all about belief systems regarding forecasting, and that's the secret and ultimate best answer to making money in the future. So, River Theories flies against the face of all that, and so it will always be a problem. Just the way wave analysis, the problem with wave analysis is it's too complicated to do well, so most people will never go to the trouble to learn it, whereas River Theory is not a learning curve issue as much as a personal psychological paradigm shift, like you say, in the way you think about markets. And so it's difficult for most people. And it took me probably 20 years to realize that something was wrong with what I was doing because, I got better and better at wave analysis to the point where it was, almost ridiculous how good my wave analysis is at sometimes. But my trading wasn't getting equally better. It was falling way behind, increasing at about an arithmetic pace where my forecasting was increasing about a logarithmic pace. And the further apart they got, the more it started questioning, like, what in the world's going on here? How is this possible? I mean, if I can predict well, how come I can't trade well? And that's when it dawned on me that prediction was not the answer to making money. And that's a very bizarre thing to realize.
Sure. And you mentioned a lot about stop placement and profit target. So I would suspect that depends on what kind of trader you think is dominating, and when you enter a trade, you already know where you're going to place your stop. So let's say if it is
the way you enter, how you place your stops, how you move your stops, what your target is, even if there is a target, and even weirder, all that stuff changes almost every single bar. So you have targets constantly moving up or down. You have stops constantly moving up or sideways. You have strategy constantly changing, just like if you're in a river. I mean, it's just you don't just sit there in your boat and just, you know, say a prayer.
Right.
You have to put the oars out or turn the engine or do something, right? You have to steer through the river. So real trading is just like that. It requires constant reevaluation and constant, you know, maneuvering to stay alive.
Right.
So that's how real trading works.
And I guess that goes to the next slide where you actually have a, I would imagine a limit that's more like a buy or sell stop limit, or is something else?
It depends. Generally speaking, with trend followers, you're using buy stops and sell stops. With top and bottom picking, you're just immediately jumping in at the market when you think the top or bottom is occurring based on behavior. Not future expectations, but current behavior. And with bargain hunting, you're usually using a limit order on a pullback. So each one of them is different, which, of course, makes sense because each trades in a different kind of way. Let's move on to the next page. I don't want to get too bogged down. That stuff might last too long otherwise. Let's go on to this page. It says tracing fish in a river. Instead of it being a fish, let's just pretend it's a slightly weighted ping pong ball that may have a little bit of maybe a ball bearing or something heavy inside of it to give it some momentum, not just being pushed around by the air. So let's say that you're at the edge of a river and you place this weighted ping pong ball right at the edge of the river. The river's flowing, of course. If you let go, that ping pong ball is not going to go perfectly horizontal along the north bank of the river. It's going to get caught in turbulence and move around and jump around in different kinds of ways until it might pass what I call the event horizon, which is generally around 25% of the range of a river. And it passes that point, and that's when it gets into the acceleration range of a river. And then that ping pong ball will start to move a lot quicker. And as it gets to the other event horizon on the other side, then it potentially will get caught in the fluid dynamics and the turbulence on that side and go back and forth until eventually it may hit the other side of the river. The interesting part is that when I drew this out and realized what kind of behavior you might get from a ping pong ball or any kind of, you know, object in a river, that it actually starts to create a logical explanation for why wave theory exists. So on the next chart, which I think is the final chart, it actually shows wave count superimposed on the behavior of what you might see of a ping pong ball or some kind of object in a river being affected by the turbulence near the perimeter and then getting affected by the momentum in the middle and then getting affected by the turbulence toward the end. And this was like a real, you know, eureka moment for me that, wow, this is actually potentially a higher level than wave analysis because it actually gives us an explanation of how wave phenomenon works and why it actually happens. And this is interesting because I do feel like wave theory is just generally one part of a three-pronged equation. Wave theory primarily is a top and bottom picking technology. Even though you can sometimes predict direction and trend, it gets very hard toward the middle. It gets very hard during corrections to know what's going to happen. But at the very beginning and the end, that's when it becomes really clear. So for the most part, wave theory is a top and bottom picking system. But there's other, you know, there's two other things. There's trend following and there's bargain hunting, which wave theory doesn't deal with as well. I still think wave theory is the most sophisticated form of technical analysis, you know, ever devised. But it does have its flaws and it does have its problems. And you need to know when it's useful and when it's not and when it's dangerous to use and when it's, you know, very advantageous. So this is, I think, a really cool graphic to show that there's a logical way to represent behavior, connecting it to river theory, connecting it to the behavior of water in a river, and price action in a market, which then directly connects it to wave theory action of that price action.
Sure. You mentioned that wave theory is an excellent tool to utilize to pick top and bottom. Do you incorporate that into your river theory technology, or the river theory technology is a standalone technology that does not use wave theory for top and bottom picking?
Well, river theory can stand alone, but in any market, it's always nicer if you know which direction not to trade. So just know that the trend is up, then you just avoid any signals that might be to go short. And if you know the trend is down, you avoid any buy signals, right? So
right.
Ways can be handy in helping to determine the general trend or when big changes are occurring, like in the S&P just recently, and when the market all of a sudden dropped on Friday quite substantially and sort of unexpectedly, I immediately realized that that may indicate that the bull market is over, that we've been in since the low in 2009, and it's the first time in probably 2 years or more where it was even possible. And so that was a critical event. And for that reason, I'm primarily only going to focus on trades and scenarios that look to go short until wave structure tells me otherwise. So I do tend to integrate it because I do know wave theory and I do know it really well. But river theory can be used totally independent and can do well on its own. It just, you automatically eliminate 50% of any possible signals on the wrong side of a market if the trend really is up or if the trend really is down and you know it.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Well, so that's pretty much overview for today. The primary understanding today is that river theory does have a connection to wave theory, and it helps to explain why wave theory actually works, where the phenomenon comes from, which makes it to me an even more interesting and compelling concept because it's helping you trade without worrying about prediction. Because something we may not have covered yet, when you're predicting a market, the real problem with prediction is that it gets your ego involved in the trade. The minute your ego is involved, you don't want to lose, and you don't want to be wrong. And that's really the reason that forecasting is so dangerous. If you don't have anything to lose, it's much easier to be objective and to do the right thing. So the minute you start getting involved in forecasting, you say you get in at $400 in some market and you think the trend is up and it drops to 390. Well, then you're going to look for some rationalization that, oh, it's still okay and I'm going to wait a little bit longer, and then it goes to 380 and, well, it's probably still going to go up. And you keep waiting and keep lowering stops or adjusting things and you just keep losing more money. That's typically what happens to people who are in the forecasting paradigm. River theory completely avoids that because all stops are purely objective. You can't move them. You can't change them. They never go against the trend. They only go with the trend or stay where they are. So you can never increase risk. You can never move them below certain points. It makes trading a lot easier for that reason. And you know that they're objectively designed and they're based on an idea of who's in charge so that you know that you're moving them and placing them in the right kind of way for the environment that you're currently dealing with. So you have the best chance of making money of any of the six people who are trying to attempt to make money from a trend.
Okay. My last question before we end this second interview, we have actually one more interview coming up. Does Neely Reverse Theory has the ability to, or can you actually program it to be automated trading, or is still a fairly discretionary trading?
Well, I've been working on automating river trading now for about 10 years, maybe a little bit longer. I've been paying a program in Germany to program it into TradeStation, and it's, for the most part, it's done to where it presents information, because river theory is more an observational phenomenon, just like wave theory is. There's nobody who can come in and tell you with a mathematical formula that this is the top or this is the bottom with wave theory. River theory is the same. It's not a mathematical formula. It's an observational, real-time phenomenon that does not attempt to predict the future. It just deals with what you know and what's happened in the past, and has nothing to do with what you think is going to happen in the future. So it can be programmed, but automation of it gets a little more difficult. I've been working on automating it, but I always tend to find that just having the information, sort of like just having the wave theory structure in front of you, makes it easier to make the decision on how to approach a market than to have a computer do it for you, because the computer can't think in dynamic, you know, a deductive and inductive reasoning and things that are just a little outside the realm of computers. Computers want everything to be absolutely perfect, where the human brain can think in sort of fuzzy kind of ways. And river theory, I think, is slightly fuzzy. And for that reason, I rather personally just look at the information and make a decision on what's the best way to approach a market than to try to get it down to an absolute formula.
Sure, sure. Well, great, Glenn. I really appreciate your time, and I guess we look forward to our next interview to dig even deeper into Nimi River technology. And so far, the first two interviews has been very exciting and informative, and I appreciate you again.
Okay, bud. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Gosh.